David Plotz had a fascinating series of stories on Slate Online. A bunch of stories about a guy who had started up a sperm bank with a rather novel idea. The only guys who could be donors to this sperm bank had to be Nobel Prize winners. And the only women who could use those genetic donations had to be women who were members of Mensa, the high IQ society. How did that work out, and what was the general idea behind it? David Plotz joins me here on the Paul Harris Show. Hi, David.
Hello.
Welcome to the show. And Robert Graham is the guy who did this, and was this smarter kids through breeding, or was there something more evil behind it?
Well, the idea was certainly smarter kids through breeding. A lot of people saw something very sinister in it. Graham was associated with a lot of people who had racist views and other unfortunate views. But Graham's basic idea was that there were too many unintelligent Americans who were having too many children, and he was hoping that if he could just get some of the intelligent moms and some super intelligent sperm donors, then he could maybe fight off the genetic decline he saw around him. So it was a weird idea mostly.
So in other words, there are too many stupid people. I want to make smart people, and this is the way to do it.
That's exactly the plan. That
okay.
was the plan. So let me get some Nobel Prize winners and see what they can do for me.
How many of those donors were there, and how many women used the donations?
Well, there were only 3 Nobel Prize winners who were donors, because when he went public with the bank, this was in 1980, there was an incredible controversy where people started calling it a Hitler project and called it eugenics, and they were very upset about it. And so the Nobelists got really scared by the bad publicity, and so they stopped being donors. And so Graham had to go out and recruit other outstanding men. He recruited a gold medal winner, an Olympic gold medalist. He recruited, various young prodigies and other, promising scientists. And eventually they fathered about 200 children who are now, the oldest are in their early 20s, and the youngest are about 7.
Does that mean there were 200 moms, or were there multiple births to some of the moms?
Multiple births to some of the moms, so probably about 150 families or so.
Okay. Out of that 150 families, how many geniuses have we made?
Well, I'm in touch with about 35 of the kids, which is about 34 more than anybody else has ever found. The kids are all anonymous, and the donors were anonymous, the kids were anonymous, the families are anonymous, so I had to find them through a variety of very complicated means. And the 35 kids are certainly above average. There are some who are quite brilliant, a few who are, extremely great artists and wonderful athletes, and a couple who are just outstanding students. But there's a wide range. There are some who are below average. There are some who have some serious health problems. I sort of think this has less to do with their genius sperm donor fathers than it does to do with who their mothers are. Because you ask yourself the question, what kind of woman goes to a sperm bank known as the Nobel Prize Sperm Bank? It's a mother who's very serious about raising children who will be accomplished, and who would probably, I think these mothers would have had accomplished children whether they'd gone to the Nobel Prize Sperm Bank or if they'd gone to Fred's Discount Sperm Warehouse.
Mm-hmm. Because they're predisposed to education.
Because they're predisposed to, to really, they cared so much about what their children would be like that they went to this Nobel Prize Sperm Bank. And so, not surprisingly, once they had the children, they were enriching them. They were, cared a lot about their children's achievements. They cared a lot about educating the children as well as possible. And so it's not surprising the children ended up being well-educated and achieving kinds of kids.
So it's funny because there's the old question, is it heredity or is it environment and upbringing? And in this case, the answer is yes, it's both.
Exactly. I think that's exactly right. But I think the part that people overlook when they think about this is they think, well, the children are accomplished, therefore it must be just the genius sperm donor. No, I think it's, as you say, the genius sperm donor plus a lot of the nurture that they're getting from these moms.
What role did the fathers play?
The donor fathers?
Yeah. Did they know any of their kids?
They didn't. I have put some in touch with their kids. That's part of the book. I mean, I think that's the best part of the book in my view. The best part of The Genius Factory is sort of the story of how some of these children and their fathers met and what happened when they did. Because that too, is a very new kind of relationship. I mean, there weren't sperm donors 1,000 years ago, and the children who've met their sperm donor fathers have found that the donors in some cases are wonderful and have really sort of stepped into a kind of family role with them, and some of them have found that the donors can't do anything and are completely unhelpful and don't want to be fathers, don't really want to be friends. So there's a range of reactions from the donor fathers.
Okay, now about the donor fathers. You go out there and you make public the idea, as Robert Graham did, hey, we want the best and the brightest. Then you go to the moms and you say, we want the best and the brightest.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just guessing that a couple of liars slipped through. Oh, yeah, my IQ, 190. Are you kidding?
You are absolutely right. That was one of the problems that Robert Graham Sperm Bank had. As I detail in the book, there were some people who came to the Genius Factory who were by no means geniuses, but who were very good salesmen. They came.
Nothing wrong with a good salesman, by the way.
Right? No, that's absolutely true. And you know, some great salesman genes. So there's one in one of the cases I detail in the Genius Factory is of a donor who convinced Robert Graham that his IQ was 160 when in fact he'd never taken an IQ test.
Uh-huh.
And he told Graham various other things about himself that were only partially true and left out some things that Graham might have wanted to know. And this man, you know, fathered lots of children who grew up, some of them grew up thinking, oh, that my father is this outstanding genius. And when they discovered that he is something short of that, it's rather unsettling for them.
Do the 35 kids that you've contacted, Dave, know their history?
The ones that I have contacted do know their history. Of course, that's because it's more true to say they contacted me. I sort of put myself out there and gave them ways to contact me.
So you didn't call them up and say, hey, guess who your dad is?
Oh, no, gosh, no, absolutely not. Although there was a British journalist who did that to one of the kids.
Oh.
And it was awful. It was tragic. I mean, she grew up thinking her father was her father, and then this British journalist, this lout, comes along and tells her it's not, and you can imagine it was heartbreaking for her.
Yeah.
Very unsettling. But I these are kids who came to me, and so they knew their history. Of the other ones, of the 180 other kids, I don't know. I'm sure some of them know their history and some of them don't.
You talked about most of the ones that you've met or talked to being fairly accomplished. Somewhere along the way there, though, out of more than 200 kids born, even these, you know, genius moms and genius dads or whatever the word is you want to describe them by, there's got to be some troubled kids there.
There are. And even among the 35 kids I know, there are troubled kids. There are some kids who have, you know, quite serious health problems, which may or may not be from their donor. And there are kids who, you know, luck of the draw, they got perhaps the sperm that wasn't as smart as some of the others. And you know, or they, for whatever reason, growing up, they didn't have developed their brains as well as some of the other kids, and who are either quite average students or below average students. I mean, that's the thing you have to remember, and this is the point I make in the Genius Factory, is that when you try to genetically program children, there's always going to be luck involved, and you know, you may the right sperm might meet the right egg, and you may end up with just the most outstanding child in the world, or you may get a not particularly good sperm from the genius donor, and the kid may have all kinds of difficulties in the world. And so parents can't expect this is a magic cure. It's not. It may be something that helps them a little, but it's nothing magical.
You know, there was a thing 2 or 3 years ago where some guy was on the internet and he was selling eggs from supermodels or really hot models.
That's right. That's right. He tried to auction them. Yeah.
And I thought to myself, there is no genetic guarantee. It's entirely possible that you could have two incredibly hot parents and turn out to be just your average looking or worse guy or gal.
Yeah, we can all think of celebrity children who fit that bill. It's true, and I think it's what's true for beauty is doubly true for intelligence.
Have there been other attempts at designer babies on this scale?
In America, there's been nothing and no attempt of any sort on this scale. I think what's coming, it's coming, though. What will come is that the science is going to get better, and people are going to be able to try to do that. And I think the children of the Nobel Prize Sperm Bank are therefore kind of messengers from that future. We can look at them and say, what is it like to grow up with this genetic expectation on you? Is it a burden? Is it a blessing? What are the things that parents will expect too much of? What will they, you know, miss? And I think that's one of the things that I try to get at in the Genius Factory is what happens to these children, and what can they tell us about the coming generations of children who will be programmed this way?
Are any of them geneticists?
Any of the kids themselves?
Yeah.
Well, they're too young. I mean, there's some who are you know, the ones who are in college or graduated from college. A few are interested in science, and maybe they'll end up that way. But no one who's cracking DNA.
I'm taking over the family business here. I'm
gonna... Exactly.
Although none of these were Robert Graham's children, or were they?
Well, we don't know for sure, but Graham himself said he was not a donor to the bank, and his employees say he was not, and I believe that.
Okay, now I got to go back to something you mentioned at the very beginning here, which is the concept of eugenics, which is basically racism at its genetic core. And, you know, there are many famous people, famous, very, very smart people who fall into the category of rather ugly when it comes to that subject. So
yeah.
where does that come down in terms of dads who donated to this? Was he filtering for or against that?
Well, he had a few donors, and the most notorious one was a man named William Shockley.
Shockley's in there?
Shockley was the only public donor to the bank.
And
he was, you know, he's a famous, you know, physicist and businessman, really one of the great scientists of the 20th century, who was a terrible racist.
Yes, he was. We're laughing, but he really was.
He was an awful figure, you know, really one of the most noxious people in American life in the 20th century.
Yeah.
And he was a donor to this bank, and that was tarnished the bank. I mean, that was the reason why the bank, which initially was perceived as sort of a weird but basically harmless enterprise, once Shockley's involvement was known, it became seen as this eugenic kind of Nazi enterprise, and that was disastrous for Robert Graham.
Did Graham have beliefs like that himself?
Graham was more an elitist than he was a racist. Graham himself, you know, didn't have he had sort of prejudiced views of the sort that someone who grew up in a lily white town in northern Michigan in the 1920s would have. But it wasn't. It didn't drive him the way it drove William Shockley. I mean, Shockley, you know, really made a big federal case out of his racist views.
Yes,
Graham,
he did.
Graham didn't. I mean, that wasn't what Graham was most concerned with. But again, because he was associated with Shockley and because he admired Shockley, people got upset about it, and as well they should, I think.
When you when these people contacted them, you started writing about them, and you've been working on this story for quite a long time. Is this something that you will continue to follow and stay in touch with them and see 5, 10, 15 years as these kids grow up, what kind of adults they do turn into?
It will, and probably the most important reason I'm going to follow the kids is that one of the main reasons why the kids came to me is that a lot of them were searching for their either siblings or for their donor fathers. And as the book is out and as there's publicity for the Genius Factory, more and more kids and more donors are coming to me. And what I can do is those who want to be in touch with each other and want to kind of have family reunions, I'm able to help them. So that's the reason I'm going to particularly stay involved is to help these kids find out who they are.
Has Hollywood contacted you? This is a movie waiting to be made.
That's what I like to hear. there's been some interest. We haven't sold the rights. So if any of your listeners is a major St. Louis or Hollywood producer, they should get in touch with me, please.
Yeah, I got to tell you, when I first heard the idea, I thought, oh, this is a novel. This is science fiction, but it's not. It's a true story.
It is. It's one of those. You know, it's one of those truth is stranger than fiction books. I mean, so it's a good read, I think. So I hope other people take a chance on it.
Yeah, I think it'd be a great movie if done by the right people. Just let's not get any of those Hollywood people who think I'll marry somebody good looking and then we'll have good looking kids. Because as you pointed out, that doesn't always work that way. It's called The Genius Factory: The Curious History of the Nobel Prize Sperm Bank. David Plotz from Slate Magazine. Thanks for being on the show today.
It was my pleasure. Thank you.
It's the Paul Harris Show on News Talk 1120 KMOX.